Thank you for joining us for this Next Year Turnaround Restructuring and Insolvency podcast series. We'll be exploring global issues that affect the world economy. I'm your host, Rebecca Harding, and I'll be joined by a selection of experts from around the world in firms that are all part of the Next Year International Network, and all of whom are leaders in turnaround, restructuring and insolvency. Next Year International is a leading global network of independent accounting and consulting firms. All of the experts appearing on this show can be contacted via the Next Year International website. Thank you. Hello and welcome to this podcast episode. The news is jam-packed with problems and has been for months. In our podcast, we've looked at energy issues, supply chain problems, the ongoing impact of COVID, and now the world is facing the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Are businesses going to suffer from the impact of this awful conflict? And if so, how? Which sectors and where? Are the demands on business overall going to prove too great? I'm joined today by two Next Year experts to explore these issues. We have Raina Colgan, who is Senior Advisor at PPNC Independent Auditors. He lives in Brazil, but is German and works in Europe, the USA and South America. He's an expert in turnaround, structuring and organisational change. We also have Martin Trott, who is a partner at Rawlinson & Hunter and an insolvency practitioner at R&H Restructuring. He lives in the Cayman Islands. He has lots of cross-border experience, having worked with corporates in the UK, the US, the Far East, Europe, and of course, the Cayman Islands. Hi, Raina. Hi, Martin. How are you?
I'm doing perfect.
Yeah, hi, Rebecca. Yeah, very good. Thanks. Pleasure to join you today.
Yeah, no, it's great to see you both. So, I mean, we've done various podcasts over the last couple of months. So we've been looking at COVID, we've looked at energy, we've looked at supply chain issues, and now we've got all these issues in the Ukraine. I mean, the news is exhausting, I think, for everybody at the moment. There's so much happening and so many different types of problems. But we talk about people and we talk about individuals and countries. But what about businesses? I mean, everybody's more international now. Can we talk about them? I mean, are we going to be seeing lots of businesses going under as a result of all these different issues? What do you think?
Rebecca, I don't think that overall a lot of businesses will have really problems and issues that will lead to an increased percentage of insolvencies just because of the war between Russia and Ukraine. However, that is not saying that companies will not face difficulties over the next couple of months, quarters, and maybe 2 or 3 years. But that will be because what we're seeing already is an increase in commodity prices, both for the agricultural sector, but also for mining and energy. Commodities which have risen over the last 8-9 weeks, 15-20% probably. And this will lead to more inflation, and more inflation will drive a faster rise of interest rates from the central banks than people expected just a couple of months ago. So, and the rising interest rates will lead to higher cost of capital and more difficulties for companies to get funding and pass on the inflation increase to their customers.
I know, I can see that. And what about you, Martin? What do you think? Are we going to be seeing more insolvencies?
Rebecca, I gave up trying to predict rising insolvencies many years ago. It's very, very difficult to tell because there's so many. The world is now so much more globalized than it ever was, and there's so many factors that go into pressures on businesses. But the fact that all of these issues that are coming out of Russia and Ukraine are so soon off of the back of the global pandemic, I think is a major issue. And as Raina says, the rising cost of capital, the increases in cost of living, and therefore which is pushing inflation up, which is going to push up interest rates, means that for a long now more than ever, there's going to be a lot of pressure on businesses and finances to meet these increased costs of capital. So, as a result, I do think we will see an increase in insolvencies, and we're certainly starting to see that in the Caribbean region.
And what about, I mean, with COVID, you mentioned COVID. So we've had all the economic stimulus packages that everybody was sort of depending on for a while that was going on. Obviously, they've all kind of gone recently in all the different countries across the world. Do you think that's going to have an impact in making things more difficult for people and the reality of COVID sort of starting to come through?
I think it will add to like the problems that we're already seeing. Because the entire packages that governments, I don't want to say handed out, but really offered and provided and that people and companies made use of, they increased the level of public debt in at least the Northern Hemisphere substantially. I don't know what finance ministers put in terms of midterm interest rates on that package that they really borrowed over the last 2 years, 2.5 years. But they're going to be impacted by raising interest rates, which made it more difficult to repay the debt. So I don't really know. It's not going to be good that we have this. So it's just an accumulation of various negative impacts. COVID to start with, then the supply chain disruptions between especially Asia and the US and Europe as a result of COVID, and now the war between Russia and Ukraine driving commodity prices up again. That's all not positive. And it confronts a situation where public debt is already at a high level.
And I suppose the interest rates for individual businesses, being a business myself, you know, we've got so used for so long at having really low interest rates, haven't we? It's been many years now. So do you think people will have the provisions in place to deal with those interest rates that, you know, going up so rapidly?
You're absolutely right, Rebecca. There's a whole generation of businesses now out there that have enjoyed historic low interest rates for the past 10 to 15 years. And now we're entering into a cycle where interest rates are going to move up across many jurisdictions around the world. And businesses are going to have to plan for that and make sure that as well as those businesses in the consumer products sector, for example, that may have been benefiting from more than other sectors from the fiscal stimuluses that governments have introduced to economies around the world are going to have to cope with that, but also cope with rising interest rates and having proper forecasting and proper planning is going to be key.
I mean, you work with loads of funds, don't you? Because you're in that very horrible place, the Cayman Islands. You're nice and warm with your palm trees out your window, which I'm not going to talk about. but you see a lot of sort of fund investments and things like that. And what do you think money's going to start coming from different places? Are people going to be more inventive in terms of where they're getting their funding?
Yeah, don't believe what you read in the press about the Cayman Islands, Rebecca. We're very nice out here.
I personally think I should come and investigate it.
that's right. One of the drivers for not as many insolvencies as possibly people think is the access to different financing structures. The Cayman Islands and other Caribbean jurisdictions are used for domiciling financing structures, being a tax neutral jurisdiction, and we see the rise in fund structures and fund setups are ever increasing in these jurisdictions, and that's as a result of access to cash and money. And there are funds and other non-traditional lenders out there who are sat on cash that they are ready to deploy. And so companies and clients that were used to traditional bank lending, as an example, should definitely consider other forms of financing and should consider private equity, private debt, should consider funds as alternative forms of financing.
No, that's really interesting. And I mean, are you seeing sort of results of the whole sort of Ukraine conflict in your area? Are you seeing that affecting what you're doing on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I'll see this in several aspects. I mean, you see it in Europe. The last time I've been in Germany was 3 weeks ago. When you take a train from Berlin somewhere west to like Düsseldorf or Cologne or Frankfurt and other large cities, the train is packed full of Ukrainian refugees, which is really heartbreaking to see. The conditions they arrive in Berlin, which is the closest large city to the Polish border. So that's one thing. The other one is you see this in businesses because a lot of German companies or European companies have some form of relationship, either customers in Ukraine or Russia or suppliers. And I have just one example here, a company that is active in heavy machinery equipment manufacturing. They had some service technicians in the city of Murmansk, which is on the Kola Peninsula in Russia. That's where the Russian fleet for the North Sea is located when the war broke out. So they had difficulties getting their people out of Russia, which took, I think, 5-6 days, getting them through China and the U.S. back to Europe. And then they also have canceled orders for deliveries. So
it's very difficult. But, I mean, you're in South America and, yep. You know, you've got quite a big food agricultural element in South America going on. Do you think that as both Russia and Ukraine play important roles in the global agro-industrial sort of supply chains, do you think there's going to be a shift in business? Or do you think there's just going to be a terrible shortage and bread will become a luxury food item?
There will be, before there is the shift in the business structure or the value chains in the agro-industry, which will take usually a year or two to manifest themselves. There will be a shift in prices, which we're already seeing. Both Russia and Ukraine are large exporters for fertilizers. And I think the price increase for fertilizers has been about 40% since the war started. And that has an impact, for instance, on countries like Brazil and Argentina. So this will drive the prices for soy and other commodities which are grown here. And that, in effect, will drive prices for basically all the other food items across the world. And the other thing is both Ukraine and Russia are also big market participants for wheat, especially going to European countries and Northern African countries. And the prices for wheat have also risen. So I don't want to say bread is becoming a luxury good, but when you consider that the raw material prices of usual roll is like 40%, so if you have an increase of 20% on 40%, it's almost a 10% price increase you're going to see in the supermarket.
It's quite noticeable, isn't it? But it's interesting that you're talking about the sort of trade moving to different parts of the world. I mean, Martin, from your point of view in a funds context, are you seeing a shift of where the wealth's coming from? Are there changes that you're seeing as a result of all this?
Two of the areas that we're seeing it. One, at a local level, we're seeing the same thing as Ryder mentioned, which a lot of people are experiencing, which is the consumer prices going up, the cost of fuel at the pump, etc. And it's driving the debate on alternative renewable energy and pushing that forward. So one of the benefits that may come out of this is less reliance on fossil fuels and more reliance on renewables, which is great. Yeah, being in a place where the sun always shines and the wind is strong, we should be using those sources far more than fossil fuels. So that's at a local level, which I think everyone's experiencing. And at an international level, the main impact of the Ukrainian situation is on the sanctions. And we are having to deal with the sanctions that have been imposed by the US, the UK and Europe in particular And tread extremely carefully around anything that involves Russia. There are Russian investors, for example, in funds that are located here in Cayman, and there are conversations that are having to be had by investment managers and fund administrators around how to deal with sanctions when you have even at a level where you've got a Russian individual who has a Russian passport who may not be sanctioned at all, just by virtue of the fact that he's Russian. We are having to think very carefully around, for example, what to do with distributions to investors if you've got that situation. So that's where we're seeing it. Sanctions is obviously extremely you have to be extremely careful when dealing with sanctions, given the criminal consequences for breach of sanctions. That's largely the impact we're seeing at an international level.
That's really interesting. And in terms of where the money's coming from, because what I always notice is that within Europe, we think about ourselves so much. We tend to be quite self-centered, I think, in just looking at what's going on in Europe and sort of thinking it's the centre of the world. And yet, you know, as Rainer always says to me, there's like 1.4 billion people over in Asia, and having worked out there, I know they don't even think about it. So do you think this is a massive opportunity for them to actually gain some trade from what's going on in Europe? I mean, it's not their argument. It's not to do with them. So they can actually use this opportunity either with putting wealth into, you know, funds that you deal with, Martin, or winning trade. What do you guys think about that?
I think that the, let's say, midterm consequences, not for the next, I don't know, 12, 18, 24 months, but probably over the next 3, 4, 5 years, what we will see is that countries like the BRICS countries, Brazil, India, China, South Africa, and also Russia as part of BRICS, not to forget, they're taking on the political decision side right now already a more independent stand. I don't want to say against Europe or the United States, but they're just making clear, okay, this is not our issue and our problem, this war between Russia and Ukraine. And when I talk to people in Brazil or the other day, I talked to one of our colleagues in the Middle East. They definitely see a shift from, let's say, the Northern Hemisphere, European, North Atlantic relationships and view how the world, let's say, should look like and how it has been functioning for a long time, towards other centers. I don't want to say a multipolar centered world. It's not clear yet, but it's definitely changing. And population distribution and the future population grows over the next 30 years, which mainly will happen in Africa and some parts in Asia, but definitely not in Europe or North America, will drive this. And if businesses in Europe have been, let's say, focused more on the European, North American trade relationships, you better start thinking about other parts of the world, which are growing faster and in a more reliable way over the next couple of years and decades.
That's really interesting. What about you, Martin? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, every situation creates opportunities for other countries, and some of these countries that historically have been referred to as emerging markets are no longer emerging markets. They are fully fledged participants in the international community, and we're seeing in the Caribbean region, we're seeing a rise of the LATAM economies and a lot more structures that involve South American investors, South American money, and we've always historically had very strong connections to the US and to the Far East. A lot of the distress that we've seen, a lot of the insolvencies over the past 2 years have been largely out of the Far East as a result of some of the economic issues China's been facing, particularly in the property market. So yeah, I mean, I think all these situations, well, as bad as they are, they do present opportunities for others, and therefore, you know, clients in terms of dealing with rising interest rates and accessing markets, clients should definitely look at other markets for alternative forms of financing.
That's really interesting. So, I mean, that leads us on to my final question, which would be, what's your top tip for businesses? I mean, we're sitting here going, where do we start? There's so much to deal with. So, I mean, Martin, what would be your top tips for a business at the moment?
Definitely talk to your advisors. Involve your advisor in decision making. No. In all seriousness, it is vitally important, more so than ever, to be focusing on forecasting and focusing on business plans, and making sure that you're incorporating rising interest rates and rising commodity prices into your business plans, because it's coming, and we're seeing it now. It's only in the short to medium term, those costs are only going to increase, and therefore forecasting and seeking advice on ways to manage your business and to focus on your costs. I know a lot of businesses that we come across have been doing that as a result of the pandemic. So this would just be an extension of that sort of focus on the costs of the business. But that's vitally important in a situation where we're facing these increased interest rates.
Right. And what about you, Rainer? Do you have any tips for business that will help us all get through the next couple of years?
I mean, in addition to what Martin already said, talk to your advisor. Make sure that not only your advisor, but your own, if you're the owner of a business or with your management team, if you haven't done already, go back and start revising your midterm planning like 3, 4, 5 years out, and make sure that you're not only planning for rising interest rates, like, okay, it's right now a little bit above zero in Europe what you pay, but go to levels like 5, 6, 6.5, 7%, which most people will probably say nope, but just, I mean, do yourself a favor and do some scenario planning, because that's probably what we're going to see if inflation will stay at the level that we currently have. I know that the European Central Bank is hesitant to start raising interest rates, but you can only do that so long until then the population starts feeling uneasy of their money being really worthless, 10% less after a year. So this is one thing that I would advise. And the other one is keep a focus on your cash situation. If you haven't done so already during the pandemic, take a look at your cost structure. I mean, even in considering times with low interest rate, cash is important. And if interest rates will be rising, cash will be more expensive. And thirdly, would be really midterm, 5 to 10 years. If you haven't tried to figure out if you can do business with what Mark said, were the emerging markets and are now the full-fledged ex-emerging markets, take a look at expanding beyond maybe the regional footprint you have right now.
That's such great advice from both of you. Thank you so much for all the things you talked about today. It's so interesting and really helpful as well, helpful advice. So thank you very much, guys. I hope you have a good day.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for joining us. This podcast was brought to you by the Nexia Turnaround Restructuring and Insolvency Business Group. The group was formed to bring together financial, legal and operational expertise from across the Nexia network to support global clients and international business at times of operational challenges and financial distress. If you want to get in touch with any of our speakers or any of the experts in the 45 firms in 36 countries across the world, then please click the link accompanying this podcast or visit the Nexia website. All views expressed in this podcast are individual opinions and do not constitute professional advice. You're advised to seek professional advice if you want to see how an issue applies to your own situation.